Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/modern. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Star Wars Book Club Podcast, your weekly Star Wars podcast about all of the movies, books, comics, and everything else in this new expanded universe. It's not that new anymore, though. It's almost like a year
old. Almost a year.
Yeah. Which is still kind of new. The newest universe. This week, as always, I'm your host, Blake Schultz, and joining me is Tyler Barry.
What's up, buds and babes?
And we'll be getting back into Lost Stars, the best Star Wars book ever written.
Yo, this is unbelievable, dude. I really didn't go in with that high of expectations. Like, I just didn't.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, we've had such bad luck with two out of the three of these other Journey to the Force Awakens young adult novels that we read, and I was just like, oh, man, maybe we should just take some time away from the books because it's clearly not getting us what we want out of this new Star Wars EU. And then this thing came along and has just fucking blown me away. Just blown me away. Like, there's no other way to describe it. Like, I'll just get it out of the way so that I don't forget. But I was saying to you before we started the show, it's like, maybe it's partly due to the fact that I don't read a lot of fiction these days. I read a lot of marketing and advertising books for work and stuff like that, but reading this book, I can't remember the last time a book outside of things like The Great Gatsby or Catcher in the Rye or one of my favorite memoirs by Dave Eggers, Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. Like, I can't remember the last time a book outside of those three books that are super influential to me. I can't remember the last time a book has actually evoked that many different emotions.
Yeah.
That Lost Stars had. Because, like, I've gone from one chapter, like, laughing at something that was said or, something going on in the book to, like, on the verge of tears through some of these situations that Thane and Sierra have been through. And it's just, it's a testament to how good Claudia Gray is at writing this book.
Well, and those characters, too, like, and I know we just came off of Civil War coming out in, like, the theaters, and the big thing with that was, like, you relate to Cap's side and Iron Man's side. That was the big thing with that. And these characters do such a good job in Lost Stars of evoking that same thing where, like, chapter by chapter, you're like, I totally get where Sienna's coming from.
I meant Sienna, obviously. Long day, guys. Sorry.
You know, we're just now sponsored by Sprite, and Sierra misses a cold, refreshing beverage.
Or the R&B singer.
Yep. A cold and refreshing R&B tone.
Yeah.
But, like, there's just so many moments where you really understand Sienna and where she's coming from and why she feels this way and why this is important to her. And I think they really nail that post us seeing Yavin get blowed up, where they're like, oh, you condone this. And she's like, no, I don't condone it, but I understand the idea that we did this to prove a point, because if we didn't, the war would have... We saved more lives than we lost.
I one of my favorite parts of this book is how it does really paint a different side to the Empire.
Yeah.
Not everyone is Emperor Palpatine or Lord Vader. Like, there are real human beings, real beings that have conflicted views on what the Empire is doing. They believe in what the Empire stands for, but that doesn't necessarily mean they agree with every single action that the Empire carries out. And I don't think that's not really anything we've ever seen from the Empire in a movie.
No, and we've never seen it in a movie or even in the comics. It's always painted as this very just, like, big force of nature. It's painted, frankly, the way in World War II the Nazis are painted for us historically. There's no way to look at that without them being evil and horrendous. That's how it is.
Yes.
And this takes the Empire, which in all the movies and everything else is like the purest evil. Like, there's nothing else besides power and control. And I mean, outside of maybe episode 3 when Palpatine's talking to Anakin and he's like, no, the Jedi and the Sith, we're the same. The difference is just how we use our abilities.
Right.
But I want, even Anakin says it when he's like, I brought freedom, prosperity, justice, and order to my new empire. And it's like, that's something he really feels. And those are all nice things to have when your government is falling apart. But this is the first time that we've seen normal people and even officials higher up than them be like, this is great. It was amazing. They landed on our planet. They freed us. They gave us more opportunity. There's jobs. There's this. There's this. There's opportunity. Look how nice Tarkin is to us.
Yeah, the sort of like class study we get in this book is really fascinating when you really dig into it. Like, knowing that the Empire went to
Jellicon
to sort of, for better or for worse, take it over and put it under their reign. But in doing so, it gave all these people opportunity that they never would have had otherwise. It's fascinating when you really dig down deep into it. Like, the Empire's not necessarily all bad.
No, it's not.
It's actually done a lot of, when you think about it, it actually does a lot of good things for a lot of good people. Like,
yeah.
Sienna and Thane are good people.
Yeah.
They are not, no aspect of them is inherently bad or evil.
Everyone we've met in this book, outside of Tarkin, who we only know is really bad from everything else.
And frankly, he's actually been very nice in the two scenes we've seen him. And obviously, yeah. Ulterior motives, but still.
Right, but still nice. And in his philosophy, doing the right thing.
Correct. Yeah.
Everyone's been a good person. Like, the closest we've had to someone being mean was when we thought thought that Thane's roommate was the one who sabotaged them. And even that was, I guess, Thane's parents are awful.
Thane's parents
scum.
And brother are a piece of shit, but
his family is scum.
But we haven't heard from them since the first act.
They're not in the Empire.
Right. Yeah, no, right.
And yeah, we haven't heard from them in a long time. But and even that, too, talking about like the class studies, we're seeing the root of the class system from Jellicon now in chapters 6 through 10, which is what we're on right now.
I guess we should have
come back with
that.
Yeah. This is the second part, guys. We did 1 through 5 2 weeks ago. Then we did a break because a lot of people were busy. And now we're back for 6 through 10. So
it's notated in the episode description. Calm down.
You all know what's going on. Basically, we see the class system. That's what I was saying. We see the class system that they were integrated with. That, like, this was better than this. And you lived in the valley, and that means you have less opportunity. And Sienna's parents were always very, like, they have more than us. You have to fight hard for what we have. Don't trust that boy. He's just going to end up using you the way we all do. And we see Thane's parents were just like, ew, valley people, garbage. But we're seeing that come back now in a way that makes sense for how they feel about the Empire. Where Sienna kind of looks at something as something to aspire to. And from her class system, from where she was, you had to be loyal and have honor and have duty. So to her, that's what life is.
Yeah.
And if you do that, good things will happen. And Thane kind of comes out of this view of, like, they tried to, I guess, bring him up to basically be like, those people are lesser than you. And it didn't really stick with him. But I think just that and the fact that every authority figure in his life was evil, he really looks at that, at what's happening, and kind of criticizes it more. And I think that also makes him look at the rebels different. Like, I think what we're starting to see now, too, is he's like, maybe the rebels aren't that bad, which is the way he thought about Sienna. But what we're seeing with Sienna is her being like, no, they're horrible, awful people. They are the worst. They're why Alderaan is gone. And it's interesting that now, where she was always accepting, she's just painted a picture of the rebels as something bad.
Yeah.
It's craziness. The whole thing is insane. But chapters 6 through 10, let's get into some of these big story beats we had, because there were a substantial amount of them. We got to see Princess Leia for a minute,
which was very interesting, seeing her not really very much older than either of our two main characters.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. I don't think we've ever really seen Leia at this sort of... I mean, I can't imagine she's more than 21 at this point, so that was really fascinating.
And that was cool, too, because, again, you get that different POV, and I liked that for a while Sienna was like, oh, man, she's, like, my age, and she's, like, super accomplished, and I'm not. But then there was kind of this wave of her just being like, how could a senator in the Imperial Senate be a terrorist? Like, how could she foster this rebellion? Like, why would you do that? The Empire's done so many great things, which is a really fun thing to think about when we know, knowing the movies, that her and her father started this. And
yeah.
She didn't, but her dad saw both of her dads, her birth dad and Bail Organa, saw the death and rise of the Republic and the Empire. So seeing them now where it's like, oh man, it's a senator. She couldn't orchestrate an attack on our Death Star. Also, I've thought about this a lot with Star Wars, where I'm like, they do work for a company where they're like, you've been assigned to the Devastator. We're building the Death Star. And it's like,
Star Destroyers.
Right. Maybe get some good PR people on this, Palpatine. Like, someone's going to figure it out. Like, no, I'm a good person. Just come aboard my death machine. It will be fine. It does. What is it? It brings candy to children. I bring love and prosperity wherever my destroyers are found.
I love the idea of like a PR firm handling this entire situation. Like, guys, look, Vader, we get it. You got the life support system in your suit. Maybe we could figure out a way to make your breathing not so menacing when you're in front of a group of a large group of influential people. No? Okay, well, we'll go with your idea then.
Well, let me see your ideas. Well, it's just that, Palpatine, you're a little, like, terrifying to look at because of the wrinkles and the fact that you embody death. I could see what... All right, yes, fair enough. It's been a while.
Why don't we get you an image consultant? Mm. Maybe we can, brighten up your image a little bit. Make you a little bit, well, less hideous to look at.
I was thinking that if I just hid it under this dark cloak.
No, see, we don't want to do anything that's dark. See, that's already the problem with Lord Vader, your lordshipness guy. He's black and has a menacing breathing thing going on. Well, I mean, come on, you got to work with us a little bit. Meet us halfway here.
I just thought that if we ruled with fear, we'd have more people joining our system. Well, maybe if fear wasn't a central theme. What about hope? No. No.
Emperor, how long have we been in a firm? We've dealt with many a situation in our day, many a planet blowing up. Can you let us do our job here? And then just let us do our job?
Then it cuts to just Vader and Palpatine. I know that they're just trying to do their job, but they don't... I orchestrated this... From the beginning, it was me. I was running the Imperial Senate. I masterminded two wars, and I convinced you to murder a million people. You genocided a race, and now people believe it's a myth, and they want to tell me that my black cloak is menacing? I think I know something about something. Or am I just being a dick? You can tell me if I'm being a dick. No, no, they're wrong. That's what I thought. Incinerate them.
That's not what I said.
But it's hard to understand you. You're so muffled. I mean, maybe listen to some of
them. Just tell them I have asthma.
That's why I've been telling a lot of people that. I think that would be amazing.
A Star Wars PR firm book.
Yeah, just, oh, nothing would make me happier.
I want it now.
But it's highlighted in this when Sienna does have so much hope about it, but she's still like getting on board death machines.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, I wonder I wonder how much brainwashing goes on at the Academy.
I imagine.
I feel like they use that word once in the book, like the term brainwashing. I feel like it's used once throughout this book, and I remember seeing it and being like, "That's interesting. That's interesting that anyone would use that word."
Well, and Thane brings it up
That's what it is.
He's back on Jellicon, and he sees the young kids, and he realizes that he thought it was all fun to fly the TIE fighter around.
That's exactly what it is. You're right, Blake.
And it terrified people, and all of a sudden he was like, "Oh, Tarkin found me when I was like 5, and when I was like, planes are fun." And he was like, "Planes are fun. Come fly planes for us." And he's like, "And all they did was inject me with these ideas of what I wanted. And I never really took the blinders off to look at the bigger picture." But I also like that Thane has this embodied philosophy that's just like, the Republic fell, so could the Empire. Like, he says that a lot, where he's like, "I don't know, guys. Like, this other government crashed and burned. Why wouldn't this do the exact same thing?"
His flip-flop on the Empire is fascinating to me because not to say that a planet blowing up and him seeing people enslaved aren't big things, but it doesn't take a lot of events for him to realize how wrong the Empire is going about this and that he just does not want to be a part of it. And that's what makes his... I can't remember if I'm going to get too ahead of myself.
If you want it, we can just readjust and let people know that we've also read up to chapter 14 and that was going to be the next segment, but we can mix and match.
Okay. Yeah, we can mix and match. Yeah. His flip-flop on the Empire makes his situation with Sienna that much more heartbreaking in my eyes, because they're clearly meant for each other in almost every single way, and you see that in every interaction that they have together, but there's one fatal flaw in their relationship, which is Sienna still believes in the core principles behind the Empire, and she can't see... She sees the flaws, but she still thinks that the inherent...
The ends will justify the means.
Yeah, and Thane has truly realized that that's not enough. The means need to justify the ends, so to speak. Like, you can't just blow up a planet just because you think it's going to save even more lives than it's going to take. That's not how justice works.
Yeah. Well, and Thane too. I mean, it all goes back to that childhood and getting beat up by his parents, getting beat up by his brother. And it's almost very Captain America, when he's in the war room and they're like, "So you want to go kill Nazis?" And he's like, "I don't want to kill anyone. I don't like bullies." And it sums up that character. Yeah. And I feel like Thane is very much like, "No, I don't want to kill people. That's not what I signed up for. I didn't sign up to blow up planets and enslave people. I signed up to bring order and justice to people who need it, and that's what you told me this was. But then you nuked a planet out of the sky. And
then in return, you got a bunch of my friends killed who were on the Death Star."
Well, that's what I was about to say, but he feels the same way about the rebels blowing up the Death Star. There was never a moment where he was like, "I'm glad they did that."
No.
He immediately was like, "They did the same fucking thing. Why would you do that?" Which is interesting, because I'm like, obviously his road is probably going to end up with the rebels, but I'm really curious.
Jumping ahead, obviously, since we're doing that, it does, because of someone we meet who we've been clamoring for more from since we started doing this podcast damn near a year ago. And that's our boy, Wedge Antilles.
I know.
I dropped my Kindle when I read that it was Wedge Antilles who encountered him in this cantina. Like, I was not expecting that at all. I don't know who I was expecting, but I was not expecting Wedge at all.
I wasn't expecting it either, because it's been so... When characters in this book show up that we know, it's fairly quick. Like, Leia was quick.
Tarkin, and not super meaningful. I mean, I guess Tarkin was pretty meaningful, yeah. But like the Leia encounter, and maybe, who knows, we'll probably get another glimpse of her before this book's over. I'm sure. Right now, the encounter we had with her wasn't super meaningful, but
yeah.
The Wedge encounter was probably the most meaningful of the three, like, major characters. Well, Vader was kind of meaningful because it was Sienna's first interaction yeah. with him, which was a really fun scene to
and I want to bring that up specifically because, like, one of the things we keep doing is, like, old EU versus new EU. And I don't know if you remember or if you know, in the old expanded universe, when his ship goes flying off, A, you do see it straight in and fly away. But when you see it go off, in the old EU, there was a comic where he crash landed on a nearby Yavin moon and, like, ended up controlling a pack of, like, wild dogs and becoming, like, their alpha.
What the hell?
And then found, like, an Imperial base.
Dog Vader?
Yeah. Yes. And then, like, sicked these dogs on the Imperials there to steal one of their ships. Jesus. And fly away and, like, meet up with everyone. Which was a bananas story. And one, that's such a moment, like, we talk about this a lot with some of the new comics too. They get into these moments that we don't need to know every single day in between A New Hope and Empire. We just don't. That was one of those moments specifically where I'm like, yeah, he probably just flies back. I don't need a...
Sounds like that's one of those situations that summed up why the old EU needed to be killed, I guess.
Yeah. And I kind of loved that in this, they were just like, we got a distress call from Vader. Can you go get him? And I was like, oh, yeah, that seems much more like what would happen. Yeah.
Seems very possible.
He'd strain out a ship and be like, I'm wounded. And I could use help.
I am also your leader. Get the fuck over here.
I will. I have, in the canon expanded universe, used the Force to pull myself through space into an enemy starship. I will destroy you if you don't do this.
Yes.
Hey. But I did just love her new friend who was on the ship with her and was like, have you met Vader? Oh, then why don't you go greet him? I'll keep flying the plane.
Yeah. And Sienna's like, oh, okay. And then she's like, oh.
I am taking command of your ship.
Yeah.
You two, yep. Go in the cupboard.
You got it. Whatever you say, boss.
Neat. Sounds good. Oh my God, you've been on the same Star Destroyer as me this whole time?
What the fuck?
That's terrifying. And that's something else too, where I'm like, I wonder if Sienna's ever going to see his wrath. Like, if we're ever going to get to a point where, like,
I don't think you have that interaction in this book without setting it up for that. I think that's got to happen. And I don't know in what capacity it will happen, but I think it's got to happen. Especially, I mean, when we get to basically the end of where we stopped in chapter 16, we're on Hoth.
I know, which makes me so excited because Hoth is my favorite.
But before we get to that, we're obviously jumping around because we're excited and that's what happens when you read 10 chapters of a book.
Yeah, 200 pages of a novel.
But I want to go back to Sienna and Thane on Jellicken because that was one of those moments where I said in the first minute of this episode that, like, I went from being super happy to just super sad, on the verge of tears in a matter of, I don't know, 15 pages maybe.
Yeah, I've never laughed so hard at a moment that also made me that emotional in years. And it's a little bit before where they're on Jellicken and they have their hologram conversation and they're both like, oh my God, what happened to Alderaan is horrible. And it ends, and the first paragraph is Thane being like, oh my God, she agreed with me. She thinks that we have to do something else. She thinks the Empire is wrong, and we're going to run away together. And then it cuts to Sienna, and she's like, oh my God, he agrees with me. Alderaan was bad, but the Empire is still good. So he's going to come back, yeah. And we're going to be together forever. And I was like, oh my God. Like,
the miscommunication is almost laughable, it's also heartbreaking at the same time.
And they do this twice where they kind of play it as a joke, but it's not. And it's also when Alderaan blows up and Thane is just like, I'm so excited. Nasha told me so much about Alderaan. I'm going to get to see, like, Bars. God. And it's literally written, I'm going to go to Bars. I'm going to get to meet his family. We're going to go exploring. Oh. And that's all it is. It's one line that's just, oh. Because it's gone. Like, And it's just like picturing him just sitting there, like smiling with this, just like, we're going to show them the Death Star, and then the rebels are going to back down, and we're going to have peace again, and we don't need to go to war. And oh my God, this is my boy's planet. This is going to be so... And just everything he's believed in is gone. And I like, too, that they touched on a lot of people feeling that way. But, you know, Thane and Sienna, Angelica.
Yo, they fucking...
they
and
be banging.
And then they fucked, and I was like, dope. And then immediately after, it was like, well, I guess see ya, because we can't do this because you still love the Empire, and I certainly do not.
So, and I love that for a while, too, they're both like, so you're sure you don't want to come back? I'm sure. And you're sure you don't want to run away with me?
I'm sure.
I'm sure.
And it's almost funny when he says, and I feel like every adult has been through this one time in their life at least where they've been with someone post-coitus and have been like, well, this probably was a mistake. I should probably be an adult and say we should stop right now, or we could fucking do it again. And like Thane literally says that. He's like, man, this is not good. I should tell her that she needs to leave and this is over, or we could just fuck again.
But like, she's fine.
Like, she's super naked right now also.
But like the subtext of that whole moment is also just both of them being like, this is all we have. We need to take all of these years of wanting to be together, all of this attraction, all of this like sexual tension, and kind of smash all of that.
Smash into, our genitals together.
Right. Yes. And just like literally put that whole thing into a night and a morning. So it makes sense that he's like, oh, I'm really conflicted, but also like this is the only time we get to pretend to be in a relationship.
And that's another moment where I went from like sort of laughing to just being kind of heartbroken, because it's clearly not just some physical attraction they have to each other. They're obviously in love, and
yeah.
It goes back to sort of what we talked about from the first five chapters we read, which is this is almost a Romeo and Juliet story.
Yeah.
And I originally prefaced that because of the families that they came from, but now it's more about the families that they have now, which is, I mean, at the end, at the point that we get to at the end of chapter 16 or whatever, Thane's family is the rebels. Sienna's family is the Empire.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a really interesting way to sort of flip a well-known story trope on its head.
Well, I also think we alluded to that too, because like the back of the book says he joins the rebels. Like it's not like hidden.
Oh yeah, I mean,
but
are surprised about it.
But I thought, and we were at, and our first episode was the first 100 pages, and I thought that by like page 101 he'd be at the rebels. Like I thought that was really going to be the crux of like, we love each other, but we're on two different sides of the war. So I was like, yeah, it's going to be like Romeo and Juliet. But the fact that we're basically at the midpoint just got there.
The midpoint is basically that Hoth battle.
Yeah. And the fact that that's like his first kind of bout with the rebellion is like, oh, we spent a long time just developing them together. And why this is important.
And I think that's a testament to how well Claudia Gray has written this book. Because, I mean, the first half of the book is literally a character study.
Yeah.
It's a character study about these two people who are clearly in love but can't be together. But, dude, that battle on Hoth, to see it from to read it from a different perspective was fucking awesome. Especially because Thane was kicking ass.
Oh man. Oh yeah. Like, and I'm so excited to see them like inevitably fight.
Oh.
Like,
what the moment that I loved from that fight was after Thane did that crazy fucking through the legs maneuver on the AT-AT, and they almost got fucking killed. And then all of a sudden after that, it's like, oh, hey, Commander Skywalker came on the comms. He says he's using the tow cables. And Thane's like, oh, even better. Let's use the tow cables. I'm like, that's awesome. We get to see a different perspective of it. That's so fucking cool, man. God, I love it.
And I also just love that it was them being like, Luke came on the comms, use the tow cable. Like, you see him say that in the movie, but for some reason, the reason that it wasn't Luke saying it to Thane, that somebody else was like, hey, guys, so this thing went down, and it's kind of working. Do that. But...
And that's why I wanted to get... I've been saying for weeks, and I know you've agreed, like, I've wanted to get to the point where we're past A New Hope.
Yeah.
And now and in this book, we are. It's fucking awesome. I love seeing the Battle of Hoth from a different perspective, because we haven't seen it thus far.
I know, and I'm assuming, too, what makes me excited is that this is going to continue. Like, eventually, we're going to get to Jedi, which tells me...
You mean in this book, you think we're going to get all the way to Jedi? Well, that's interesting.
So here's my new theory. We've been kind of skipping ahead. Like, the last few chapters were like 8 months post-Yavin, 4 months post-Yavin.
And then 18 months post-Yavin was chapter 16.
Yes. And so I'm sure there's somebody out there who can be like, well, Jedi was whatever, blah, 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 Yavin, because that's how the old Star Wars canon used their timeline.
Sure.
Before Yavin and post-Yavin. But I'm pretty sure that the way it's kind of going is now it's going to... highlight those events. Like, we'll probably see him at the second Death Star, and my big guess is that since it does still have Journey to the Force Awakens on the cover, we'll probably see Jakku.
Like, wow, you think?
My new prediction is that the climax for the book is going to be Jakku, and that we're going
to
see.
So when we get to Jakku in Force Awakens, it's 50 years 30 after...
Years.
30 years after Empire.
Yeah, Jedi. 30 years after Jedi.
I'm sorry, 30 years after Jedi.
Well, because in... This is such a weird thing to bring up, but in Battlefront, the Battle for Jakku DLC is like hours after the Death Star blows up.
Oh, and now it's you're like, now immediately like, just making me want a Thane and Sienna character in Battlefront.
I mean, that'd be great, but like... And we know, and I think they said that DLC was like, yeah, this is canon. The Battle for Jakku happens.
It's definitely canon.
Right after Jedi. That's why there's old pieces of it everywhere on Jakku in Force Awakens. And I was like, oh, then maybe they'll show up on Jakku for a minute. Or like, maybe we'll kind of see the Empire fall and Sienna broken, and she'll find kind of the like remnants of the First Order. Like, maybe she'll be one of the first people that gets talked to about, like, hey, this guy, Snoke, wants to do this thing.
Oh, you think we're going to see Snoke in this book?
I don't think we're going to see Snoke, but I think that the subtext of what happens will be like, this new person is kind of doing the same thing.
Interesting. Okay. So, I'm trying to think of what else we haven't covered from these chapters, because then I kind of think we should get into what we think is coming next, since that's what we did on the last episode.
We'll speculate a little bit. We've now met Wedge, Vader, Tarkin, and Leia.
And we've heard Luke's name.
We've heard Luke's name. Who do you want them to meet, if anybody? It can be brief. It could be a big moment.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry, man. Before we get to that, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that a female Wookiee.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Huge, right?
How did I forget about female Wookiee?
It's fucking great.
She's great.
She's like just this motherly figure that just kind of reminds me of a like softer, like female Chewie.
Yeah. Well, I love too about her where we've never really seen them acknowledge the fact that you have to learn the Wookiee language that for the life of me, I cannot pronounce.
I loved that. Loved that they mentioned he's like, because they were like, oh, well, Thane has started to get better at the Wookiee language. I was like, oh, wow, that's cool.
Well, because he laughs and he's like, oh, I just called my hair my coat.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great. He's figuring it out. But I also just liked that whole thing. Like, their bond. And this was also, like, on just, like, the little things. When he's on Jellicon, he notices, like, posters and news articles and, like, interviews of Palpatine promising peace. And I remember something you had brought up where you're like, I want to see more of the media and the news. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, there are TV shows of the of Palpatine, like, well, our plans for Jakku are to bring freedom to them. Like, which is awesome. Like, I love that they're literally expanding this world in such a... Like, Star Wars, as much as I obviously love it, like, those first three movies are just so much the hero's journey and Luke's story and this through line of, like, the Jedi coming back. It's kind of nice to take a break from the Jedi and really see how this world works and how this galaxy operates.
And I still think we need a book that's something like that. Like, something set in, like, a Star Wars, like a Star Wars universe, like newsroom or something like that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not like a full length novel. Maybe it's like a little like 300 page.
Yeah.
Like,
it would be a good, like, one shot too.
Or that. I could get down with that. You could get enough information out. I just think that's an aspect of the world of the universe we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I think it's important because, I mean, like the media is such an important part of our real life culture.
Yeah.
I think it would just be fascinating to see it as a part of the Star Wars culture.
I mean, look at the Marvel universe. Like, I brought up on this podcast before that, like, and it was kind of what I thought was we were going to get with Lost Stars, and we sort of are, but not in the same way. That there's that book by, it's Alex Ross who drew it, and it's Marvels is what it's called. And it's just one photographer. And it's just the first time Galactus shows up and the death of Gwen Stacy,
right,
and the mutants showing up.
Right.
And it's such an interesting way to show how, like, the world reacts to this thing, which is, I think, always makes it stronger. Like, even seen in Civil War when it's in the trailer, when Thunderbolt Ross is like, people are afraid. And you're like, oh, this has impacts beyond the, like, tunnel vision of it that we see.
Yeah.
Like, we get to see these heroes. We see Luke, Leia, and Han painted as heroes the whole time. There's never a moment where we see a character be like, that's Han Solo, the evil smuggler. Like, even when he's painted as a smuggler, which is an illegal thing to be, he's great. Kessel Run. Oh, we've never met anybody who's like, oh yeah, Han Solo, he came in and, like, smuggled out a bunch of stuff that would have given this planet a lot of jobs, but now I'm broke. I hate that guy.
Do you think we'll get a Han Solo mention in this book?
I feel like we have to eventually.
Well, I mean, yeah, because he's on Hoth.
He becomes, and he's also, like, the leader of the Endor battle. Like, on Hoth, he's basically just getting Leia out of there, and then he spends Empire going to Cloud City. I don't think we'll go to Cloud City, which would be wonderful, but I wouldn't be surprised if...
Well, there's no reason that Thane would be on Cloud City.
That would imply that we could see him in the movie somewhere. Like, he would be the guy with that ice cream maker.
Yeah.
That's Thane. Had to get that ice cream. No, honestly, the characters I want to see the most are the ones we sort of... Wedge, I'd like to meet Mon Mothma.
Yes.
Ackbar is always fun. Like, I kind of want to stay in this political war world, and I don't really want to go play with the big three. Like, I don't need a scene of, like, Luke and Thane and Luke being, like, the Force. Because I like that the way they view the Force in this book is, like, I don't know, maybe it's there, probably. Like, I actually liked how Sienna summed it up. She was like, I'm sure the Force exists. Like, why wouldn't there be something combining the universe? But I don't think people can control it.
Mm-hmm. What about a little Maz Kanata sighting?
I actually was really, really hoping we were going to get that. There was that.
I don't know how it would be. I don't know how it would be relevant, but that's because we don't know that much about Maz Kanata.
Right.
But I think I want her to start popping up in things unexpectedly because I want to learn more about this character so badly.
I like her a lot. And I remember at one point they were like, she's old. She's older than Yoda is, like, something that they've said in press.
Didn't they say she's like 1,000?
Yeah. Like, and she even in that, she has that moment where she's like, I've seen the Sith, the Empire, today it's the First Order. Like, I've seen all of this. Maybe there will be something on Bespin, and we'll just see her grab the lightsaber.
Oh.
And then there was a small little yellow thing picking up a hand. I don't know what that was about. I just got in my X-Wing and flew off.
Then I went to try to fuck Sienna again. I mean,
it didn't go well. She really likes Palpatine. Well.
She's real,
you know,
mad at me.
He almost went down, but she would not turn around that photo of Palpatine smiling, and I just cannot get it on with that wrinkly old dude's looking at me.
Gross.
Too bad he doesn't listen to his PR people. Just like just a mask, man.
We'd be great PR people for the Empire.
Use the Force, push the wrinkles back. You're a smart guy. But that's more of what I want to see. Like, I don't need, like, it would be dumb and it would never happen. But, like, I don't need Thane to accidentally land on Dagobah.
No.
And that's obviously not where we're going, but, like...
But, no, I agree. There's no reason to... So far, this book has not forced any character that we already... Any character or place that we already know on us. It's done everything super, like, very naturally.
Yeah.
I don't want that to change. There's no reason Thane's going to need to go to Dagobah. There's no reason he's going to need to be on Cloud City with Lando.
Like, and it's funny because, like, and I just realized this now of us talking about it, but, like, Empire Strikes Back is an incredibly personal movie. Like, yes. The two things that happen is just Luke on a rock with Yoda, and most of the rest of the movie is in the Millennium Falcon. So there's really no need for Thane to be anywhere, which is kind of awesome because that means he can go kick it with all of the people who are important in Jedi. Maybe he goes... and helps steal the shuttle Tyderian.
Yeah.
Maybe he helps plan the second Death Star run.
Maybe he kicks it with Ackbar, like you said earlier.
Right. Like, he can kind of go meet them. And meanwhile, that also means Sienna won't really get a chance to play with Vader. But, like, there's a lot of other Imperials that she can go play.
But I don't think we've seen the last encounter between Sienna and Vader in this book.
No, there will be one more. I hope so. Jedi. She has to get one.
Yeah.
Like...
I just love this book. Like, it's so I hate doing a podcast where we only have bad things to say. And part of me also hates doing a podcast where we only have good things to say because it makes us seem like super fanboyish and girlish when we have our girl counterpart here. But I just don't have any issues with this book right now, and we're only halfway through, and maybe that'll change, but
I have only had one.
Okay.
And it was shortly,
I'd really like to hear it.
Yeah, it was shortly after they hooked up.
Okay.
And I remember at one point just being like, this is a really long chapter, and it was pretty much a chapter dedicated to them being like, this is why I think the Empire is wrong and this is why I think it's right, let's hook up. And that, and like the first...
So the whole chapter on Jellicon,
yeah.
They sort of have a misunderstanding about why Sienna is there, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the first half
I
of them, like, in the bar and the hut together was great. But the back half of that chapter, like, I remember at one point, like, I finished up a page and turned, and they were just like... And Sienna thought back to her days of honor and duty.
Okay.
And I was like,
yeah.
We've been saying the same thing for 10 pages. Like,
that's fair.
I get, and it was one of those small moments where I was like, guys, I get it. I understand. You've done such a good job explaining these characters and who they are and why they believe this that you don't need to, and be on the nose about it. This is a great moment to just be on the nose and be like, this is what I believe, but I love you. But when you say, this is what I believe and I love you 8 times in a row, like, I'm ready for the next thing to happen.
And that's a really good point, Blake, because I have said through and through throughout everything we've read, and we've talked about it probably 8 or 9 different times, that to me this does not feel like a young adult book. Moments like that make it feel like a young adult book.
There's
because it's like... it's almost like you're dumbing down the subtlety a little bit because you... think a lot of teenagers are going to be reading this, and I get that. I do. Like, that's what that's the young adult book format, is to sort of repeat yourself and really, really, really emphasize the love story even more than you need to. Like, people at our age are like, oh, we get it. They're clearly in love with each other, but they can't be together for these reasons. We don't need to read it 10 times over.
Well, I think, too, when you're 13 to 16, you relate to that a lot. And you like hearing over and over again, I love you, I love you, I love you. Because those are like, everyone's had an early relationship where they're just like, I love you so much. Our feelings are what matter.
Even though you don't know, like, what the fuck love actually is.
It doesn't matter that we're going to live in different states. It'll be fine. My feelings are more important than reality. And then you get older and you're like, reality is more important. Well, not more important. Just as important than the emotional stuff.
Right.
But I also, when you said that, when you were like... doesn't feel like a YA novel except for these beats. I was like, oh, it's like It's like The Flash and Arrow. It doesn't feel like a CW show, except for the moments that are so much a CW show, where they're just like, superheroes are fun. Let's do melodrama for 10 minutes.
And to be fair, that's mostly Arrow.
Yeah. It's,
Flash does a much better job of that than of quelling that. Moments, than,
but Arrow is a lot more just like brood.
But The Flash actually makes me cry. Arrow does not. Arrow just makes me mad. Except for that Valentine's Day episode where I was practically bawling.
Well, that's because that Valentine's Day episode reached into our hearts and threw it away.
As I told you in our buddy Terrence, who's on Hollywood Already Did It, I'm really glad I waited until April to watch that episode and didn't, and not February when I was going through my own stuff, because I probably would have jumped off a bridge.
So what I'm saying is we should adapt Lost Stars
into a show?
CW miniseries.
You know that... You know, that would actually probably work out really well. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I guess, so we don't ramble on too much more, I just don't know what to say, man. Like, this book is so well written. And it makes me so excited to not only finish the back half of this book, but to also get into Bloodline, which just came out on May the 4th. And it's also written by Claudia Gray. And it's the next thing that, spoilers, but it's the next thing that we're going to read for this podcast. And I couldn't be more excited for it. Like, Claudia Gray,
she gets it.
I think more than anyone who's written any of the novels so far in this new EU, what she's done better than anyone else is understand that we get it about the characters we already know. What we need to see is the characters we've never heard anything from.
Well, and then, and I will say, just to be like, to not necessarily play devil's advocate, but to be like, before Journey to Force Awakens, when they did Lords of the Sith, Tarkin, A New Dawn, Tarkin too, but A New Dawn especially did exactly what you're saying, where it's a story about Kanan before Rebels came out that was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and one of my favorite moments of that whole book is just him being like, he gets the message from Obi-Wan that's like, everyone come back to the temple who's alive. Like, we can do this. And he doesn't go because he just assumes it's a lie. But there's this great moment where he's like, every night I can't sleep because what if it was real? But Obi-Wan would come look for me. And it's just this weird moment where you're like, oh, but Obi-Wan's on Tatooine. Like, if you would just go, but like, and it's... does the same thing. I'm like, Hera gets involved, who's in Rebels. It's this whole band of them, but it's a really interesting take on this middle part of the universe where it is like, he uses the force jump at one point and is like, oh, I need to move. And someone's like, why? And he's like, because 30 people just saw me use the force. And sure, they can't prove that it's the force because I just jumped real high. But if anyone puts that together and it gets back to the Empire,
I'm screwed.
Not only will I be screwed, but everybody I care about on this planet will die. So I'm leaving forever. Goodbye. And I'm like, and that was a really good book. This book is amazing. And
it's
Claudia
so good.
Gray is the best.
It's,
but she gets it. She understands that like we're expanding the universe. We don't need to hear about Luke being, because again, to go back to what I was saying with that one little part of the chapter where I felt we were getting repetitious, both the Leia and Luke YA novels got repetitious because I know that about those characters.
And our big issue with those was that it did it so quickly. Like, yeah, there are a couple moments in this book that really that show that it's still a YA novel, but for the most part, it does a great job of keeping the story moving forward and keeping us learning more about these characters, about certain characters we already know, and just about the universe as a whole. And
yeah,
I couldn't be more pleased with the first half of this book. And frankly, I'm just really excited to knock out the second half and find out what really happens at the end of it. I'm super curious. I don't think either of us either of us really have any idea what's going to go down. And that makes me so
happy.
That's
the best part.
Makes me so happy. Guys, if you're not already, please read this book.
You
please
have to.
Just, it's important to this new EU. It's more important than a lot of the comics have been at this point, frankly.
Yeah,
and I don't 100%. Know if that's a bold statement,
no.
But I think it's more important than a lot of what we've gotten from, even from Vader and Star Wars and...
All of those comics do a really good job building those characters, but this book builds the world. And that's...
I couldn't have said it better myself,
and
man.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm just so excited that we saw Civil War, but that the reason that movie was also so great is that it built the Marvel's world. Like, we see that, and that makes the story richer. And if anybody has seen Civil War, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But this book does that, where it's like these things, Alderaan getting blowing out of the sky, we knew mattered to Leia. We knew mattered to the Empire. We didn't know that 60% of the Imperials bailed, and that people were becoming suicidal, and that everyone was having this question of faith, and that you could do something that for a while the Empire would kill you for, but since they needed so many extra people, not just from the deaths on the Death Star, but because everyone was leaving, is insane.
If I had to rank stories that we've seen so far in this new EU in terms of the importance to fleshing out the universe, I mean, this Lando and mm-hmm. Leia would be the top three.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't even think it's close.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think it's close.
I would agree with that. I was trying to think. I was like, has there been any... All the time.
Tarkin would be a close number four.
But it's still mostly about Tarkin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Actually, I will argue that if we're talking about building the universe, the first five issues of Kanan did do a really good job of being like, Order 66 happened and okay. the clones blacked out and they don't know what they're doing.
I see where you're coming from with that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but this is
But this is definitely in the top three. Lost Stars is definitely a big universe builder, and it's just a good read, man. Like, it's so much fun to read. 100 pages goes by like that.
I'm pretty sure if this was a movie, it would be my favorite Star Wars movie.
Fuck, I think it should be.
Like, I think I... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're rambling on.
We'll wrap it up, guys, but we'll be back next week to talk more about this. Thank you so much for listening, guys. As always, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/the Star Wars Book Club podcast, on Twitter at SW Book Club, on Instagram at Modern Nostalgia Productions, where you find our other two shows, Modern Nostalgia Gaming, and Hollywood Already Did It, which has started our YouTube channel, which is just /Modern Nostalgia. For a minute, you'll mostly be seeing Hollywood Already Did It on it. I'll get up some Modern Gaming. We're going to launch the video for the Star Wars Book Club when we start Bloodline. So be on the lookout for that. And you can find me on Twitter at AsAlwaysBlake and Tyler at...
I'm at the Ty Game. And man, we got a lot of new followers, both personally and for the Star Wars Book Club Twitter. Thanks, guys.
I was about to say the same thing.
You know, keep sharing with your friends, keep sharing with people you think would be interested in what we've got going on. Cause you know, I mean, we've been at this for close to a year now, and it's something where we really care a lot about, and we really just want to make good shit and have a lot of fun. So, you know, if there's anything you want to talk to us about, anything you have to say, feel free to hit us up personally or through one of our various Twitters or through our website. We just want to make good stuff for you guys. So keep on listening, and we'll keep on doing this.
Let's go read Lost Stars.
Oh, let's go read Lost Stars, babe.
All right. See you guys.
Love you guys.